Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, June 24th. Adam Azer with Scott White and Chris Towers. Boy. Whoa. Yes, Scott.
It almost sounded like you weren't going to introduce me. I was a little worried.
I was a little hesitant because I almost said Al. I'm sorry, Chris.
I just finished chewing
up. Not all nerds are the same.
I know.
They're individual.
I stereotyped you. I'm very sorry.
I just finished chewing on a bagel, so it's a good thing you didn't start like
he's got a
3 seconds earlier.
He's got a whole breakfast spread right here.
Yeah, a lot of carbohydrates.
I'm going to go eat my like healthy yogurt that I'm like forcing myself to eat, and he's got like 6 muffins, a donut. It's ridiculous.
That's a little bit of an exaggeration.
Only slightly.
Yeah, only a little.
Yeah.
I
don't blame you. I love the breakfast spread that they provide for you in the office. It's very good stuff. We have not necessarily just food to talk about today. We have mostly baseball to talk about today. And some reaction from the list of my favorite bands from yesterday that might surprise you. And some emails related to those favorite bands that also involve fantasy baseball. So just a perfect mix of everything. We'll talk about Colin McHugh's great start, C.J. Wilson's terrible start. The Astros are homering all over the place. Luis Valbuena is almost up to 20. Carlos Correa has been great. Brett Cecil has lost the closer's role.
Cecil.
Yeah, I don't know why I said it like that.
From him.
Cecil, excuse me. And much more. Let's start with our email of the day from Neil. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. Email of the day number 1. Aloha, Fantasy Musketeers. This season, I've been using advanced metrics like BABIP, ISO, FIP, XFIP, to determine player value, but I play in a standard categories league. So far, I've been pretty successful in trading and acquiring players who started off slow but are now turning it around. My question is there a downside or a risk in focusing on advanced metrics and putting less emphasis on actual fantasy categories like batting average, ERA, and WHIP? Go for it, nerds! A nerd question to start it off!
The only risk I would say is we always assume regression is going to happen, and over a large enough sample size, regression tends to happen, and players will regress to their natural talent level, or what the talent level that they're playing at is, but sometimes you run out of time before that regression can actually happen. You know, it's not always a perfect thing. You don't flip a coin 5 times in a row with a heads, and that doesn't guarantee you're going to get tails the next time. So that's the only thing, but you're still playing the odds, and that's all it is that you have a better chance of having a player play to that talent level when you're using more advanced things that like ISO, FIP, XFIP that tell you closer to what that player's true talent level is.
And sometimes you don't know what they're regressing to because they haven't, you know, players change over time. So it's But the thing is, that's not so much advanced metrics versus standard batting average ERA and WHIP thing, because they're going to regress in those categories too. It's just becoming a slave to the numbers thing. You don't ever want to become so focused on the numbers that you become like closed-minded, feel like, toward what a player could be or, you know, what he's changing into.
Also, I think we should point out that just, you know, as a little primer, speedy players could have a very high BABIP.
Well, that's another thing is that you have to understand, like, it's not just speedy players. It's guys that consistently hit the ball hard. Like, Paul Goldschmidt, he's got some speed, but he's not exactly, you know, Byron Buxton. But he's always going to be a high BABIP guy just because of how consistently hard and the angle at which he hits the ball consistently.
Yeah.
Also, my thing with FIP and XFIP, I don't know if a team has a bad defense, I'm not necessarily going to look at FIP and XFIP because that's fielding independent pitching.
But
if they have a bad defense, then you still have to deal with that fielding.
That makes all those Indians pitchers. Because that's another thing that you have to take into account is that situations and context can change.
Right.
So all these Indians pitchers were pitching with a terrible defense behind them all of a sudden. They called up 2 guys on the left side of their infield that can really play.
Well, if only Danny Santana could field last night, maybe it would have been a little bit different of a situation. More on that in a little bit. That's email of the day, email of the day number 1, pardon me. Also, I'll never say BABIP. I'll never do it. It's always going to be BABIP to me.
It's BABIP and it's GIF. I will die on those hills.
You really say GIF? I mean, I know the guy who invented the
GIF. GIF just sounds better. You don't order a gin and tonic.
He said, yeah, but it stands for graphical, doesn't it?
So?
Oh, I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Well, I think the guy who created the GIF thing GIF, called it a GIF.
GIF sounds dopey.
GIF sounds like peanut butter, bro. Get over it.
It's something that we're like used to. Butter. It's a word whose the shape of that word is something that we're used to.
I mean, what do
in
you,
our mouths?
What do you call something that you get on your birthday or something?
A gift.
See,
I just
GIF feels like you forgot to say the T on GIF.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Like it just makes room for confusion.
Oh wow, I couldn't disagree with you guys anymore. Just got an email in that I think is interesting. So now it's the new email of the day number two. Panic or hors d'oeuvre rest of season?
I'll go
panic.
Hors
d'oeuvre. Oh, a little confrontation there. You know, Panic has been even better than Colton Wong this season. I see them as similar type players based on what he has evolved into, to get back to my earlier point.
Oh, right. Different play. Okay, so you like Panic, Scott. Chris likes Odor. Yeah. I have more on Odor later when we do buy or sell, which is coming up. Email of the day. Gee, I cannot speak today. Email of the day number three. And I actually got some sleep last night. I don't get it. This is from Mikey. What should I do with Andrew McCutchen? Just continue to hold because I would never get good value back? If I were to trade him, what could I hope to get back, either pitcher or batter? And what should I settle for as a floor? I do have Betts, Yelich, Pollock, Burns, Myers, and Ellsbury. So what should I do with Andrew McCutchen, who, by the way, is hitting .375 over his last 30 games?
Yeah, is this an email from late April?
Well, he's still in that span, .375. He's not even a top five outfielder. He's number seven in points. He's number 10 in roto. Hold on. He's not stealing any bases. I think that's important here.
Okay.
Sure.
He's not.
He has 7 home runs, 31 RBI, 25 runs scored, .331 batting average since May 1st. He's been Andrew McCutchen. He just hasn't been stealing bases.
Then he's not Andrew McCutchen if he's not stealing bases.
Well, he's been a little disappointing. I'll give you that, but. I mean, he's still, like, for the season, he's the 9th best outfielder in points leagues. Roto is a little further down than that. And this may very well be a Roto league, but at the same time, I mean.
Okay, Scott, you know how you say, and Al brought this up when you weren't on the show last week, you say, if a guy is not hitting well and he's still performing well in fantasy, you consider that a good sign.
Yes.
Which makes sense. The fact that McCutchen was batting .375 and wasn't in the top five at outfield in that stretch, it concerns me a little bit.
He's batting .292 when he's in the top 10, so there's two different ways of looking at that.
Do you think he's more of a top 10 outfielder as opposed to a top 4 outfielder like he was supposed to be? And, you know, if you could get that value for him, would you do that?
Well, let's see who's ahead of him. Charlie Blackman, I'll take McCutchen. AJ Pollock, I'll take McCutchen. Justin Upton, I'll take McCutchen. Brett Gardner, I'll take McCutchen. Jose Bautista, I'll take McCutchen. And then Trout, Stanton, and Harper, I guess that's where I draw the line. So that's fourth. Yeah, that's still how I view him.
Okay. The big news, Brett Cecil, however you want to say it, has lost the closer's role in Toronto. So who do you want there other than Papelbon?
It's Ozuna, right?
There's also Steve Delabar. I think he's leaning toward Delabar because he wants to keep Ozuna available for earlier innings, but it's not like he's committing to any one guy. So, that just makes for a frustrating situation for fantasy owners.
Which,
may be for the best because they're not getting many save opportunities anyway.
Ken Giles is 27% owned, and I think now's the time to start picking him up. Agreed?
Yeah.
Looks like Papelbon should be on the move. Matt Moore, 65% owned. He's going to need one more rehab start and then be activated. That's the not set in stone plan, but the hope. Jose Fernandez still set to return July 2nd. Adrian Beltre's back, and guess who's here? Joey Gallo started in left field last night, so. First of all, Beltre still has some pain in his thumb when he swings, but apparently it goes away quickly.
That was a really unexpected activation.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about him moving forward. Thumb injuries can be really tricky. They can sap players of their power.
Well, it's encouraging also that, yeah, I agree with that, but it's encouraging that Gallo's still up. I'm sure you guys are not surprised that Gallo is still up.
Right, but there was a comment from John Daniels, you know, I think it was in relation to Josh Hamilton when he's ready to return, and he's on a minor league rehab assignment, that Gallo may have to go down at that point because one of those, you know, we're not going to keep him around if he's not getting at bats kind of deals.
So. Yeah.
Strikeout rate is up to 40%, by the way.
Yeah, and Gallo, Hamilton rather, should be back on Monday, right around then. Speaking of not getting at bats and being sent down, Rusne Castillo. What a disappointment. I just don't get it. Just terrible. Is he worth stashing on your fantasy team? Rusne Castillo sent down by the Red Sox.
Probably not, but not for the reason you think. Like, not because I think he's a bum and he won't get another chance. But because if you dropped him before he got this chance, somebody else would have run out and picked him up. Now, because he came up and disappointed, you can drop him. It's kind of like where Kevin Gausman is now. You can just hide him on waivers.
We're very fickle when it comes to prospects.
Yeah.
Collectively. If you don't light the world on fire right away, and we've seen this with a bunch of guys, we turn on you real quick.
There's a bit of a difference, though, with Castillo. He's older. He's a Cuban, not your typical minor leaguer, and he was really good last year at the end of the year.
For the tiny amount he played, which may be, may have been a situation where we just
he had more plate appearances in his most recent stint than he did all last season.
If I'm just theorizing, I think this is a combination of two things. He didn't get consistent enough playing time, and his shoulder's still not quite right.
Yeah, maybe. Washington sent Joe Ross to AAA. Strasburg was back. More on him later. Freddie Freeman on the DL with a bruised wrist. It does not appear to be a serious injury. Nori Aoki's on the DL with a fractured leg. Fox Sports reports that Philadelphia and Texas are talking about a Cole Hamels trade. Is there anywhere that Cole Hamels would go outside of Colorado, which he won't be going to, that would make you downgrade him? He's already pitching in such a pitcher's park, but just to ask the question.
Hitter's park.
Hitter's park.
I knew what you meant.
I don't think I'm worried about that at all.
Okay. Johnny Cueto had his Tuesday start pushed back to Friday to allow his elbow to gain more strength. I'm just going to say this. I was offered Cueto in a trade recently. I turned it down. Unless I'm blown away, I'm staying away from him. I've read a couple of things about some teams being a little worried about his elbow because he is obviously on the trade market.
This just confirms it.
Yeah.
So you may have missed your chance to sell on it when he came back from the DL originally. He went on the DL, didn't he?
He did, but...
Yeah.
But, did he go on the DL?
He looked okay at first, and you probably should have sold him then. I know that's not helpful now, but...
Whenever, I don't think you have to
whether
overreact.
Whether or not he went on the DL, he missed some time with the injury.
I don't think you have to overreact. He's been good since he returned.
If teams are worried, and look, I was worried when he first went on the DL. It sounded like one of those injuries that could develop into something more, and he hasn't been as overpowering since he came back. It's been mostly good, some bad in there. And now this, he's hurt again. Same injury. It just seems like it could be a big problem. Like, I don't want to overreact and sell him now because you're going to sell him for nickels on the dollar, but I'm not feeling comfortable with him if he's my ace.
Yeah, the last start wasn't very good for Cueto. The other three, I don't think you could really complain about. Two walks and 22 strikeouts. Great math, Adam. In those other starts... Craig Counsell said Carlos Gomez looked a lot better last night than he did last week. So that's a good sign. And, well, a rough week for the Mets. Travis d'Arnaud is back on the DL with an elbow injury. Terry Collins hopes it's just 15 days. So maybe sometime around the All-Star break you get d'Arnaud back. I don't know how I didn't win in FanDuel last night. I guess there was just a lot of scoring. But
did you start Bumgarner?
No, I started Carlos Martinez. Was a good enough start for him. Had Chase Headley in there. Had Gregory Polanco in there. So I did well on some of the gambles I took. Just missed winning in a 50-50. But today is a new day. And hey, I only lost $2 yesterday, so no big deal. And entry fee started just $1. And, we are winning more than we are losing, just to throw that out there these days. No season-long commitment, no sign-up fees, and a ton of fun. Get on there right now. We love FanDuel. You will love it, too. And you'll also love getting some free money if you click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, enter the code CBSPOD, CBSPOD at FanDuel.com, and for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to 200 bucks that gets earned as you play. Daily Fantasy Live is at 6 p.m. Eastern on CBSSports.com. Watch that to get your help you set your lineup. Time for
you know
some,
what? Yeah. You know why I love FanDuel right now?
Why is that?
Because you reading that promo allowed me to take another bite of my donut.
Oh, donut now. You're onto the donut.
It's a donut. Well, I got a whole plate of carbohydrates, various ones.
Good.
Some muffins, some bagels, some donut.
Chris, Scott strikes me as the type of guy who could eat anything he wants all day and never gain any weight.
Yeah, probably. He's probably one of those jerks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't like people like you, Scott.
It's an especially sore subject right now for me. So I'm actively trying to not be so terrible about what I eat.
And I'm doing this right in front of you.
Just shoving muffins in your mouth.
Hey, my man.
I feel like a jerk.
You should probably stop drinking all those Diet Cokes if you really care about what you eat and drink.
He's drinking one right now.
I know. I saw it on Skype.
It's better than coffee, probably.
I disagree with that.
I think that's science. We're going to go with it.
Disagree.
Just say yes. Just say yes. It makes me feel better.
Okay. Diet Coke for everyone.
I hope we don't have any doctors or any fitness gurus listening. Just let me live my fantasy.
Okay.
It's the only thing that's keeping me going.
This is a fantasy show after all. Buy or sell. Now is the time to sell high on Michael Franco.
Buy.
Really? He's not even universally owned.
As good as he's been. I think you and I have been telling people to pick him up.
I know.
Pretty much every week.
I thought you were with me on this.
No, I am.
Saying sell high.
I am. But he's never going to be better than this. As good as I think he is, and I think he's very good, I think he's more of a 290 with 20 to 25 home runs guy over the course of a full season. Whereas right now he's on a 40 home run pace. Since he's gotten called up.
I do think he's more of a 30 plus homer guy in the long run. I mean, that's what he was in the minors 2 years ago.
Obviously, he's
only 22 years old.
He's been more of like a 16 to 20 home run guy. And look, long term, I think he can be a 30 home run guy. But right now, I think he's more of a 20 to 25 over the course of a full season. So maybe what, 10 to 15 over the course of the rest of the season.
Maybe, yeah, okay, that's fair, but I mean, what can you get for him?
That, I guess, is the question, is if people are still skeptical,
yeah,
and I don't understand why, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I got a trade for you. You tell me what you think. Michael Franco for Chris Davis and Colin McHugh.
In what kind of league?
It's a 12-team roto league.
I'd probably do that.
You would give up Franco for that return?
I would.
Okay.
I would.
Yeah, see, I don't think I'd do it straight up for Chris Davis. It's crazy.
No.
Right? I mean, is that doesn't even sound crazy, I guess.
Straight up for like Kyle Seager, that might make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But not Chris Davis.
I want to do a study on prospects in their first full season. Are you expecting these young guys, especially the really young ones like Franco and Correa, to have a terrible September or something like that, to really slump at the end of the year as they get their first full season, they're in the bigs for so long, the dog days, etc. Are you expecting that from these guys?
It's certainly possible.
And it drives me crazy, Chris, because I don't want to rely on them down the stretch and in the playoffs and then have them just go through a typical rookie slump at the end of the year.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think... Was it Michael Brantley you brought up yesterday? There was someone you brought up on yesterday's podcast that had like a terrible September. It just it was Brett Gardner. Brett Gardner from August 1st
40
on.
Games
dreadful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's something that can just happen to anyone. Yeah. I don't know if they're any more or less likely to have that happen. Young players are inherently more risky though. I mean, over any stretch, you're less likely to be able to say for sure what a young player is going to do than someone with a track record. So in that sense, yeah, I think the opportunity to sell high on a very good rookie is generally something you should always look to at least explore.
Buy or sell, Jeff Samardzija is a must-start starting pitcher rest of season.
I'm not ready to buy that yet. I mean, it's what, three starts in a row with seven innings, seven Ks, which obviously is a step in the right direction, and probably saved him from getting dropped in a lot of leagues. But there's been so much inconsistency, like the bad starts really, really bad, that to me he's still in a probationary period, to use Al's terminology.
Would you trade Michael Franco for Jeff Samardzija?
Is it a probationary period or just a probation period?
Probationary, I think.
Yeah?
I think so.
I think I'd give up Franco for Samardzija.
Okay.
I think third base is pretty deep. You picked him up late. There wasn't a lot of competition for him on the waiver wire. You probably have someone else who's decent.
Right.
I don't know. I think I might hold out for more. I mean, if particularly if the thought is selling high, I don't think you're going to... Like, it may technically be Samardzija's more valuable than Franco, but I think I just want to, like, twist the knife, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jason Hamill will be better than Steven Strasburg rest of season. Buy or sell?
Oof.
I will sell that.
Yeah, I think I have to do that.
Buy or sell, Steven Strasburg is back! And not in the sense that he's off the DL and pitching again.
He is literally back.
Yes, he is.
Five scoreless innings with four hits, one walk, six strikeouts at the horrible Freemanless Braves.
He's historically horrible against the Braves, though. I don't know how that factors into this, but it was an encouraging return. I mean, it's I'm not going to, you know, declare a verdict one start in, especially since he went only five innings. Not that they're, you know, it's understandable he went five innings, but see a little more. I wouldn't be afraid to activate him in fantasy at this point, but that's as far as I'm willing to go.
On the other hand, his velocity was down.
He was throwing gas yesterday, Chris Towers.
He hit 98 on his penultimate pitch.
98.
That's just a word I wanted to say. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was just under 98, 97.9.
You're saying average, his velocity was down in this start? And
No. I'm saying it was up.
Oh, it was up.
His velocity was down before. He was averaging 95 miles per hour with his fastball before going on the DL. 96.9 last night with an 82.5 mile per hour curveball, which I don't know how you hit that.
So you're willing to say he's back. Like, are you...
That was encouraging enough, and it was what I want. It was exactly what I needed to see.
He was on a pitch count, by the way.
Yeah, I needed to see him, and he still threw 94 pitches,
yeah,
or 95 pitches. I needed to see him come back and look like Steven Strasburg, because it wasn't like he had an elbow injury. It wasn't like a shoulder thing. It was he had the weird neck thing. He had he went on the DL for a back, right? And then he had the ankle thing in the spring.
Messed him up mechanically.
So if he comes back all of a sudden, he doesn't look like this 80% version of himself. He looks like Steven Strasburg. Yeah, I'm definitely encouraged. And it's only one start, so I don't want to overreact too much, but he's also the kind of guy that you can overreact with. And I think he was someone that you should have been trying to buy low on as he was on the DL.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I said that start was at Atlanta. It was a home start. My apologies. And
I had somebody ask me on Twitter before his start yesterday, Madison Bumgarner and Ben Revere for Steven Strasburg and Carlos Gomez in an NL-only league. I said I like the Strasburg side. He has just as much, if not more, upside as Madison Bumgarner, and Gomez is clearly an upgrade over Revere. It was a risk, but that upside is huge with him, and I think that was encouraging enough that I'm close to saying he's back.
Buy or sell, Jason Kipnis is the number one second baseman in fantasy rest of season.
No, I'm still taking Altuve. I think we're going to see that batting average climb back up again, and he'll be close to what he was last year. Kipnis is probably number two, though.
What do you make of a 385 BABIP for Kipnis, who had a 345 BABIP 2 years ago when he had a really good 2013?
What it tells me, this is something we should have brought up earlier. Just because you have a high BABIP doesn't mean that person, when that BABIP regresses, they're going to be bad. Like, he's not a 354 hitter.
Right.
Nobody is. Nobody hits 354. When he regresses and he hits 310, He's still probably one of the two or three best second basemen in baseball.
That's where, like, you know, the BABIP isn't even necessary. Because, like you said, you're not counting on it, like, except maybe Ichiro in early days of his career. You're not looking at any .350 batting average and saying it's sustainable.
All right, next up, we've got buy or sell. Nolan Arenado is better than Chris Bryant rest of season. Arenado with 19 home runs and 11 of them on the road this year. Nolan Arenado better than Chris Bryant rest of season. Buy or sell?
I buy that because Arenado has unexpectedly become this massive power hitter too. I thought he was a good one, and I thought batting average with all the contact he makes would make him elite. But now he's on a 44 homer pace, and I'm not really in seeing any reason to doubt it other than just my own expectations. So him and Michael Franco are similar in what they bring to the table, I feel like. Obviously, Arenado much more proven at this point and higher end because of it. But two guys who hardly walk at all but strike out so little that you don't care and look like they have 30-plus homer power.
And was that a buy or a sell?
I was a buy, I think. I kind of lost my way there. Sorry.
Chris, buy or sell?
I will buy it.
Buy or sell, Luis Valbuena will hit 35 home runs.
I will sell.
Gotta sell that.
I mean, he only needs like 14, 15?
I know, but
I think he has 19 homers.
Yeah, he needs 16
seems
more.
So unsustainable. And like, what hitter does this? Like,
Chris Carter?
No. I mean, Chris Carter
does what?
Such a high percentage of his hits are home runs. So he has 6 home runs in his last 9 games.
He is an overwhelmingly fly ball happy hitter. Like to an absurd degree.
So where
like
was this before? I mean,
48% of his batted balls were fly balls last year.
Right, but where were the home runs?
I think he's getting more playing time now. Is that accurate?
He had 547 plate appearances last year.
He was never shaping up to be a 40-homer guy. I can't believe the park makes that big of a difference that he goes from being a 15-homer guy to a 40-homer guy.
Well, that is why I sold 35.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
That's fair. But it sounds like you're defending him as this potential.
My biggest thing is that I'm not 100% sold that he's going to be an everyday player.
That's part of it,
season.
Sure. I mean, there's got to be something else to go with the home runs, because the home runs, you can't homer at this pace forever. During that nine-game stretch, 6 home runs, 4 hits otherwise, and they're all singles. Like, that's just not, that doesn't sound anything close to sustainable, does it?
And last time we checked, he wasn't even really that good in fantasy, Luis Valbuena. So, it didn't really matter that much because the batting average was so bad and the position he plays is so deep. So, maybe for a corner infielder or something like that. But Valbuena's 53% owned and, 195 batting average with 19 home runs. Buy or sell, Rougned Odor will be a better middle infield option than Brandon Crawford rest of the season.
You're just putting Odor against all of the Giants middle infielders.
I did this one. The emailer did the panic one. I'm gonna buy it. I'm gonna buy Odor over Crawford. I'll be risky.
Why do you hate the Giants?
Hey, I didn't come up with the panic one, you jerk. But Crawford is already struggling for like a month now.
He's been pretty bad.
Odor's 9-for-19. He has 2 3-hit games in that stretch since being called up. He's got 2 steals and 3 attempts. Led off yesterday.
You know what I am all about is these post-hype sleepers, these post-hype prospects that we start to kind of sour on them when they have a little bad stretch. And it was a month and a half. You're allowed to have a bad month and a half. Granted, it was a really, really bad month and a half for Odor. But I kind of like buying into guys after the prospect hype settles.
So yeah. Buy or sell better than Brandon Crawford, Rougned Odor.
We'll buy it. Guy hit 9 home runs in like half a season last year.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I do think I could totally see that. I mean, I liked what he did at the end of last season. I liked what he did when he got sent down to the minors. I feel like he's, gearing up to have a very strong major league career and be top fantasy option for years to come. But Crawford plays shortstop, and he doesn't. So
yes, middle infield option.
I get that, but at the same time, I don't want to say, yes, I like Odor more than Crawford, and then have someone trade Crawford for Odor, because that's just not the way it works. Even if
why it might completely Odor, be the way it works. Crawford might be a backup shortstop for you. Yeah, nobody drafted Brandon Crawford.
Okay, well, I'm just we're having to state these things so that nobody does something that nobody does something under my guidance that wasn't really my guidance, because I get emails about that all the time.
But if you like Rougned Odor better than Crawford, why wouldn't you trade Crawford for Odor?
Unless I need a shortstop.
Yeah, okay, but if you don't need
like everybody
Crawford,
else.
But maybe you don't. Maybe you have.
Maybe you don't. Maybe in that super oddball scenario.
It's not super oddball at all.
Yes, it is.
No, some people
have like five good shortstops in fantasy.
And there are 12 teams in most leagues, so that means almost half the league has a shortstop that they like and that they don't need Brandon Crawford, who was picked up off waivers, and he's trade
bait. Somebody who needed a shortstop would have picked up Crawford before the guy who already had a shortstop did.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. That's why I'm allowing for an oddball scenario, but most likely.
Well,
all right. Let's speed this up.
I think it's more of a middle infield question than, you know, I'm talking about roto leagues here, because I'm not picking up Rougned Odor in our 12 team points league where I only have one second baseman to start and I don't have to start a middle infielder. So if I need a middle infielder and I'm going to start either Crawford or Odor rest of season, I'd say give me Odor. Chris says give me Odor. And what does Scott say?
I have not picked up Odor. Maybe in a roto league I have picked him up, but not like across the board. It's just, it doesn't seem necessary at this point. He's not even playing every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
Not yet. Clearly, he could be there every day.
Down a little. Not every player can be awesome, because some players have to stay on waivers. That's just the way the game works. That doesn't mean, you know, if Odor has four hits tomorrow, I'm not rushing to pick him up, but it's just relax a little. Okay. Long season.
It is, but the question was also largely about Brandon Crawford. You know, that was
okay. Is anyone dropping Brandon Crawford right now?
Yep. I'm not asking you to drop Brandon Crawford. I'm asking you to trade him.
Nobody's dropping Brandon Crawford right now. Where does he rank at shortstops?
Where does he rank at shortstop, and then what do you realistically expect from Brandon Crawford?
I realistically expect him to be a top 10 shortstop.
Okay.
Because shortstop's so bad. But that's part of the equation.
I think we have sapped the fun out of the Rougned Odor, Brandon Crawford, buy or sell. So we'll have fun with this one. Buy or sell, Zach Greinke will win another game this season.
No way. That guy doesn't know how to win. He's an unclutch loser. Doesn't know how to win. He doesn't have what it takes.
Last 9 starts. 12 earned runs. 0 wins. That's amazing.
He doesn't want it enough.
Well, obviously we know that about him. But we should talk about Greinke, because he really is having a great, great season.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. I guess we talked about him then.
He'll never be, there's not a lot to say. He'll never be the best pitcher on his own staff. But he's a really good pitcher. I think he's actually a pretty good sell high candidate right now. He has an 88% left on base rate, which is unsustainable even for someone who's been well above average over the course of his career. He's got an xFIP that's nearly a run or more than a run and a half higher than his current ERA.
His ERA is going to rise a run.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. It's what, 183 right now?
But he doesn't look even like as good of a pitcher as he was last season, I think. You know, he's not striking as many guys out. I think this is a good opportunity to sell high if somebody looks at him as like a top 10 pitcher.
Yeah, but you have to get a top 10 pitcher. You have to get a great player.
Well, he's not that far from being a top 10 pitcher.
No, right now he absolutely is pitching like one.
No, we basically drafted him as that coming into the year. He was maybe top 12 or 13 if you want to get technical, but I do think he is this borderline ace in fantasy, so I don't want to undersell him, but at the same time, he's not going to be 183 ERA.
Yeah. All right, Tuesday standouts. Took us a long time to get to Mike Montgomery. Complete game, four-hit shutout with 10 strikeouts, no walks against Kansas City. And he's 23% owned. A lot of people want to know if Mike Montgomery is going to even be in the rotation in, well, when Iwakuma comes back and then Paxton eventually. Paxton seems a long way off, by the way. But Montgomery's pitching well. This was his first start with more than four strikeouts. What do you make of it for Mike Montgomery?
Well, the strikeout thing is why I'm not really still rushing out to grab him now. Not that I think it's a terrible idea to take a flyer on the hot hand pitcher if you have a roster spot to play with. And he is a former top prospect, was a long time ago, but it was walks that pushed him out of that picture. And he has had, the control's been fine since he got called up. His one bad start, bad in quotation marks, he allowed four earned runs in, what, 7 1/3 innings, so it wasn't even that bad. I'm not super excited, but at the same time, I don't want to, you know, put my blinders on and say Mike Montgomery doesn't have any potential to help you in fantasy.
Mike Montgomery or Trevor May?
Montgomery.
I'm actually taking May there.
Mike Montgomery or Mike Pelfrey?
Montgomery.
Yeah. I'll put my blinders on with Pelfrey.
Would you drop Ubaldo Jimenez for Montgomery?
No.
Oh, man, how the tables have turned.
Wait, did you just say no, Chris?
Yeah. I wouldn't drop him, no.
Okay.
I don't think I would either, but I'd...
Like, I'm fine
I'm surprised
with
Chris said no.
I'm fine with picking up Montgomery, but I'm not dropping Ubaldo.
Yeah.
Other standouts from Tuesday, guys?
I believe Josh Fegley hit a nether home run last night.
Mm-hmm. And a double.
Was 2 for 4. He has 3 home runs in his last 6 games. And he's actually helping get Steven Vogt out from behind the plate, which is only a good thing, in my opinion. Also, I think if you shut down the Blue Jays or Dodgers, and it's like as part of a continuing trend of dominance, that's like the rubber stamp that you're an ace, right?
Well,
like any doubt that anyone had about Chris Archer, done. Right?
Well, do you know what he's done against the Blue Jays this year?
What's that?
3 starts, 1 earned run on 7 hits in 22 innings against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, like that. Like, even if I didn't know anything else about Chris Archer, like, even if you didn't tell me, like, oh, he has maybe the single best pitch in baseball.
Which is what, just, a slider?
Yeah. Just that, the 7 hits in 22 innings against the Blue Jays, that might be enough for me to say, yeah, that guy's like a top 7 fantasy pitcher.
Yeah, he's really been incredible.
And Jason Hammel shut down the Dodgers. So,
yeah, that's very impressive too. I think that's even more impressive because the
Dodgers are so good against right-handed pitchers.
Exactly. With Jack Peterson and Adrian Gonzalez, it seems like we pay a lot more attention to this because of DFS now, but every time the Dodgers are facing a right-handed pitcher who's not a true ace, seems like you're loading up on their left-handed hitters. The Blue Jays are more about crushing left-handers,
yeah,
which Archer isn't. But I would agree. I mean, Archer kind of already proved himself even before that start. So, Hamill's the one I look at here where, like, okay, this guy seems totally legit. I do think the ERA is going to rise some because there are going to be some games where he gives up a lot of home runs, especially when the wind's blowing out at Wrigley. But at the same time, I'm anticipating having him in my lineup basically every week from here on out.
Jason Hammel with the Cubs last year was 8-5 with a 2.98 ERA. Then he had a really bad stretch when he first got traded to Oakland, but in his last 9 appearances with Oakland, 8 starts, he was 2-2 with a 2.49 ERA. So other than
four,
you know,
bad starts.
Yeah, exactly.
When he first joined the A's, and it turned everyone off on him, which is crazy.
What do you make of the Colin McHugh start from last night, Scott? You're a McHugh guy. 2 runs on 9 hits in 8 innings with 1 walk and 6 strikeouts at the Angels.
Honestly, wasn't really a game changer for me. I'm not back on McHugh all of a sudden because of it. He still only had 6 strikeouts in those 8 innings, and he hasn't had good strikeout totals, really. I mean, maybe a couple starts early he did, but very consistently, meh strikeouts from start to start. And, I mean, this was obviously his best start in a while. It was his first start in seven, allowing less than three earned runs. But, you know, still nine hits, still two earned runs, you know. I just still need to see a lot more from him to be back on board completely.
And in that game, last Friday, we all seemingly jumped on the C.J. Wilson bandwagon, and I think that caused a weight distribution issue, like some kind of problem with the shocks or the axles, because the wheels came off last night. He had seven strikeouts and five starts previously. He was shelled last night.
There were some bad pitching performances last night.
Yeah.
And here are four guys who are owned in 72 to 86% of CBSSports.com leagues. And three of them were just flat out bad, and one of them was meh. Now, the meh one was Ubaldo Jimenez. I would argue is pretty bad, actually.
Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
C.J. Wilson, who actually has a 5.21 ERA in his last eight starts. Jesse Chavez. Al called this one. He did not think it would be a good start. He did get the win, though. And, you know, here's the thing with Chavez real quick. He's only had two starts this year in hitters' parks. Last night at Texas and a few starts ago at Boston. Both starts were bad. But I looked at the schedule. If they stay on schedule, if he starts every five games, he's not going to have many starts in hitters' parks for a while. I probably looked six, seven starts ahead into the future. He might pitch one at the Yankees. He might pitch one at Toronto, but his home park is good. His division's got some good parks. So I don't know that you should make too much of that. Anyway, C.J. Wilson, Jesse Chavez, Ubaldo Jimenez, and Chichi Gonzalez. Those four guys, they're owned in a lot of leagues. Do any of them strike you as over-owned? C.J. Wilson, Chavez, Jimenez, Chichi. Oh,
Chichi, obviously. Anybody that has more walks than strikeouts is over-owned, no matter what their ownership is. He had that really good start to open up his career.
That was all really good starts.
Yeah, it was a bunch of really good starts. I meant a general really good start.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
But it's not sustainable what he's doing.
No, this was, I think we all saw this coming with Chichi.
Yeah. What about the other three? Chavez, Wilson, and Jimenez. If there's somebody you really want out there on waivers, who of those three?
Who is that guy right now? I don't know if there's anybody.
Montgomery, maybe.
How about Odor?
I don't like picking up hitters for my bench, generally speaking. I could see it in a roto league, maybe dropping Ubaldo at this point.
But I'm more likely to be dropping whoever my crappy middle infielder is.
Yeah.
How about Sano? Likely. You know, let's say you just want to stash a prospect or something like that.
That's what I was thinking, is like any of those three guys, if Steven Matz was available for some reason.
Okay. Who's the most droppable of the three? Wilson, Chavez, Jimenez.
I think Jimenez, the overall numbers still look pretty good, but lately it's been a lot of five-inning starts with, I guess, adequate strikeout numbers, but if you're only pitching five innings, it's not.
You know what I said early in the season was that hitters just weren't swinging at the junk he was throwing. And that's why he was getting strikeouts.
He's still getting
strikeouts. All of a sudden, they're starting to... Well, yeah, but that's
the one
also,
good thing he's doing.
This is a limitation of strikeouts per nine.
Yeah.
If you face a lot of batters, your strikeouts per nine is going to go up because you're facing more batters per inning. That's why I prefer strikeout percentage, just as a general point. If you're having trouble getting through a lineup, that's going to happen. You know, your strikeout per nine is going to look better.
As we know, Wednesdays are our shortest shows. We have about 7 minutes left, so I am going to speed this up.
Come on.
I'm going to ask you a few questions. Number one, are you worried about Carlos Martinez hitting a wall at some point? Last two seasons, including the minors, he's thrown 108 innings and 99 and two-thirds innings. Martinez is up to 87 and a third. Should we be factoring that in if we're Carlos Martinez owners?
Maybe you should. Yeah, I could see trading him or starting to shop him after the All-Star break, provided he's still pitching like this. But right now, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride.
He's getting lefties out now.
He is. I watched. Did you watch that, Chris?
Yep.
Boy, is he nasty.
That changeup is finally starting to become a weapon against lefties. It's so weird that it wasn't before. But that was the only thing that was holding him back.
Danny Salazar and Alex Wood, do you consider them buy low candidates?
Both, yeah.
Especially Salazar. Okay. Wood, I'm starting to lose confidence in Wood.
What was the stat that he was on the road, or no, he was at home yesterday, right?
No, he was on the road. And
he never strikes people out on
the
road.
He doesn't.
It's so weird.
At home, he's got over a strikeout per inning, and on the road, he's got 39 and 59 and a third. All throughout his career, it's been like that.
The Braves are doing something fishy with that batter's eye at home, man. That's the only explanation.
But the weirdest part is he's 0-3.
That's the only possible explanation.
Alex Wood has an ERA of 5 at home and 2.73 on the road. No, that should even out over time. Last year it was
weird.
Hey, he's only had 5 starts at home this year, more on the road.
And look, I do want to stress that there are some underlying signs that are encouraging. It was 18 strikeouts and 17 and a third innings in his previous 3 starts. The swinging strikes have been going up, but just not fast enough. And then you throw a 2 strikeout game like this in there. It's just discouraging.
Let's finish off with some music emails. This is from Jay Reimenschneider from New York, New York. I too like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Adam. That got me to thinking, which of these starting pitchers do you project to take their second half performance to, quote, higher ground? Drew Hutchison.
Isn't that Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, but they covered it.
They covered it for the Beavis and Butthead movie, right?
No. They covered it. I think that was their first single.
Oh.
I think it's on Mother's Milk. Anyway, Drew Hutchison, Daniel Norris, Wade Miley, Ian Kennedy, Michael Lorenzen, Kyle Hendricks, Matt Latos. Drew Hutchison, Derek Norris, Wade Miley, Ian Kennedy, Michael Lorenzen, Kyle Hendricks, Matt Latos. Who's going to higher ground in the second half?
Latos. That's all I'm willing to predict that for.
Latos and Kennedy.
All right, fine. I'll go out on a limb. I'll say Hutchison.
Also, Adam, I'm going to admit something that might make you upset.
Okay.
I was at Bonnaroo Music Festival 3 years ago. I completely skipped the Red Hot Chili Peppers set. I didn't
you
even
know
go.
What? It doesn't make me upset. It makes me upset for you. Like, I'm upset that...
Look, man.
I'm upset that I'm friends with you now.
John Frusciante wasn't there. I'm only here for the John Frusciante show.
Well, that is a good point.
It was the Celtics Heat when the Heat were down 3-2. I had to watch. I saw LeBron drop like 56.
Okay, that's fair. But you really missed out. You should have had someone there with their phone recording it for you. Next up, we have Brett Stedman from Big Beaver, Pennsylvania.
Great town name.
He says, in honor of my favorite Chili Pepper song, Scar Tissue, which 2 Tommy John pitchers do you project for the most fantasy points after the All-Star break?
Jose.
Yeah. That's the safe bet.
Jose, and then a large gap.
And then Matt Moore.
And then Matt Moore, probably.
Corbin could be there, but
yeah.
Matt Moore, I'll take the better strikeout potential.
Next up, we have Ryan from Fort Wayne. Adam, first of all, embrace your inner third eye that is not blind. Great band. I enjoy a wide variety of music, old and new, and still herald Third Eye Blind as a fantastic band. Well, thank you. And he says, bury that shame, sir. Hold your head high. Now, what to make of Carlos Correa? I need saves. I was planning to trade him for a closer or two before he hit his rookie slump, but now I'm thinking about holding on to him and Tulo in my 10-team Roto non-keeper league. What do you project rest of season, and should I sell high on Carlos Correa?
This is kind of testing the thing I said earlier about always looking to sell high on rookies, just because he really does kind of seem like the kind of player that might just kill it in the majors from day one. He already is, but it might just be like he can sustain being a top 6-5 shortstop.
Well, I mean, that's not even that much of a stretch, I think, because there's so few good ones. He can fall off a lot and still be that. But it's what the complication here is he already has Tulo, so he doesn't need Correa the way somebody else would. Yep. If he did, this wouldn't even be a question for me.
You're definitely not trading him just for a closer.
It would have to be two. It would have to be two
really good
and
closers.
At least one would have to be like elite level, I would say. Yeah. And even then, it's not like a slam dunk move because 10 team league, especially, and there's going to be other closers who emerge off the waiver wire. It's not
right.
a stat you need to sell out for.
And finally, from Colin, Third Eye Blind, Stone Temple Pilots, and Everclear are great, as are U2 and Aerosmith. Chris needs to listen to their 70s work.
I said their 70s work was good.
I don't really...
That's a concession. I said Toys in the Attic is great.
You didn't say their 70s work is good. You just said...
I said their 90s work is bad. I think the implication
you're wrong about that.
Is that at some point, they weren't as bad.
I just... You're so off on Aerosmith. People are...
You are crying.
Yeah, well, that's because they're amazing. Get
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, you're just so jaded. Anyway, he says, Colin says, Adam, don't throw out a subject and say, quote, discuss. It sounds pretentious. Do you agree with that?
It sounds pretentious.
I was actually going for the Linda Richman, I feel a little verklempt, discuss thing. That was kind of where I got that from. That's the classic SNL bit.
You know, a lot of times it's you cueing us. Okay, I'm done talking. Talk now.
Right.
Especially since you're over a laptop now and we don't have the visual cues.
Yes, thank you for supporting me. I'm sorry if it comes off as pretentious. I guess I'm just better than you. I don't know what to say. No, just kidding, Colin. Thank you for the support, the musical support. Give the Red Hot Chili Peppers another chance. And thank you all for listening. And Scott and Chris, I had a lot of fun today. Root Nederdorf for everyone.
Woo!
Yeah.
I'm Adam Azer for Scott White and Chris Towers. Talk to you tomorrow.